So imagine for a second you're watching a team of engineers,
Yeah.
right? And they are building just the most spectacular futuristic skyscraper you have ever laid eyes on.
Oh, yeah. Like absolute state-of-the-art construction.
Exactly. We're talking a penthouse with solid gold fixtures, smart windows that automatically adjust their tint to the ambient sunlight. I mean, there is literally a miniaturized fusion reactor in the basement powering the entire grid.
Wow.
Yeah. To anyone walking by, it just looks completely, utterly invincible.
But then you walk around to the back alley, though, and you notice the entire foundation supporting this billion-dollar marvel isn't concrete.
Right.
It's made out of damp cardboard, and there's a highly visible active termite infestation just eating through the load-bearing pillars.
It is a wild, almost comical contrast. And well, welcome to today's deep dive, because that specific contrast is exactly what we're exploring with you today.
Yeah, it really is the perfect analogy.
It's Friday, April 17, 2026, and we have a massive stack of source material sitting in front of us today.
Huge step.
Yeah, we are talking leaked corporate roadmaps, dense cybersecurity vulnerability reports, fresh product announcements. And our mission today is to sift through six major tech stories that, they might seem completely disconnected on the surface.
Right. I mean, we're jumping from the latest smartphone camera wars to like global ransomware syndicates.
Exactly. But when you look closely at these sources, there's a very clear, very compelling through line that connects all of them.
Yeah, we are currently living through this intense, feverish race for extreme hardware power and physical
Oh,
innovation.
absolutely.
But that incredible, invincible hardware is colliding head-on with the fragile and frankly embarrassing reality of our software security and, well, our human psychology.
It's the fusion-powered skyscraper resting on the damp cardboard foundation.
Bingo.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with the penthouse, let's look at the sheer, unadulterated escalation of mobile hardware hitting the market right now.
It's honestly staggering.
It is. Our sources are heavily pointing to the upcoming Xiaomi 18 Pro, which is slated to launch in September of 2026. And the leaked specs for this device are just wild.
Yeah, they're moving from a standard 50 megapixel sensor on their previous generation to dual 200 megapixel cameras.
Dual 200s.
Yeah, that covers both the main sensor and an 85 millimeter periscope telephoto lens.
Which is crazy because a four-time increase in resolution on the primary shooters. I mean, that requires a tremendous amount of computational overhead to process those images instantly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to handle that load, they're upgrading from a standard 5,500 milliamp hour battery to this massive 7,000 plus milliamp hour silicon carbon battery.
And all of this is being run on the new 2-nanometer Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 6 chip.
Right.
Packing a 7,000 milliamp hour battery and a 2-nanometer chip into a pocket-sized phone feels like, I don't know, putting a hypercar V8 engine into a golf cart.
That's a great way to put it.
I mean, just for context, if you look at the current landscape, the iPhone 17 Pro Max sits around 4,800 milliamp hours.
Yeah.
The Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra is hovering around 5,500. So Xiaomi jumping past 7,000 in a device they're classifying as a small screen flagship is a massive leap.
It is, but the underlying physics of that leap are what makes it possible, you know? The silicon carbon technology they began introducing back in their 17 series fundamentally changes the density of the battery.
Right, so it's not just a bigger physical battery.
Exactly. It allows them to pack significantly more energy capacity into the exact same physical footprint without the battery swelling or catching fire.
Always a plus.
Yeah, always good. And pairing that with a 2-nanometer processor is the critical second half of the equation.
Break that down for us. Why does 2-nanometer matter so much?
Well, to understand why it matters, you have to think about the physical distance electrons have to travel inside a microchip. A smaller nanometer rating means the transistors are packed closer together.
Okay.
So because the electrons have less distance to travel, the processor needs less voltage to push them. Less voltage means less wasted heat.
Which directly translates to radically better battery life.
Precisely. And that explains how the phone doesn't just melt in your hand.
Okay, that makes sense. But I want to push back on the optics here for a second.
Sure.
200 megapixel sensors sound great on a billboard, but are 200 megapixels actually necessary for the average person taking photos of their dog? Or is this entirely a marketing numbers game?
Oh, the numbers game is real.
Right, especially regarding low light photography. Because we know that when you are shooting in the dark, the physical size of the individual pixel matters significantly more than how many millions of tiny pixels you can cram onto a single sensor.
Yeah, basic.
Smaller pixels simply capture fewer photons.
Well, this raises an important question, and honestly, your skepticism is totally warranted here.
Okay.
In broad daylight, 200 megapixels gives you incredible detail, right? It gives you the ability to digitally crop way into a photo without it turning into a blurry mosaic.
Sure.
But in low light, those tiny pixels will absolutely struggle. So Xiaomi's going to have to rely heavily on pixel binning.
Where the software combines data from multiple small pixels to act like one large pixel.
Exactly. They have to do that to prove these sensors actually have superior light intake. But what's fascinating here isn't just the megapixel count. It is why Xiaomi is making this specific hardware move.
Oh, the supplier angle.
Yeah. If you read the supplier leaks carefully, they aren't using the standard Sony or Samsung image sensors that have dominated the mobile market for a decade.
Right. The sources specify they're using a Chinese company called SmartSense for the main 200 megapixel sensor.
And that choice is a massive play for supply chain diversification.
Interesting.
SmartSense has been quietly making huge leaps in industrial and automotive image sensor tech. So Xiaomi choosing them to power the main camera of a flagship consumer device, I mean, that signals a major shift.
They're deliberately moving away from reliance on traditional non-Chinese component manufacturers.
Exactly. The megapixel war is actually serving as a convenient proxy for geopolitical maneuvering and supply chain independence.
Wow. So hardware manufacturers are being forced to completely pivot their strategies just to survive changing global dynamics.
Yeah.
And we are seeing that survival instinct play out in brand identity as well. Look at the Lenovo Legion Y70 2026.
Oh, yeah. The gaming phone.
Right. According to the launch roadmap, it's officially returning on May 19th after a massive four-year absence from the smartphone space.
But it's returning with a completely different philosophy.
How so?
Well, they're dropping the aggressive, neon-lit, angular gamer aesthetic that defined the Legion line. The leaked images show a remarkably clean, professional design.
So it looks more like an enterprise flagship you would see in a boardroom.
Exactly. But underneath that sleek glass, it is hiding serious gaming hardware. Physical trigger buttons, advanced vapor chamber cooling, a Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 5, and a 144Hz plus AMOLED flat screen.
It seems like they are directly targeting the Red Magic 11 Pro, which basically has a monopoly on the dedicated gaming phone market right now due to their aggressive pricing.
Right.
But my hypothesis is that launching a gaming phone in 2026 is incredibly dangerous. We've seen heavyweights like Asus ROG and Black Shark drastically reduce their footprint or exit the market entirely.
Because everyday flagship phones have gotten so powerful that a dedicated gaming phone feels redundant.
Exactly.
Well, Lenovo recognizes that redundancy, which is why dropping the gamer aesthetic is a calculated survival tactic.
Okay, I see.
The dedicated gaming phone market has shrunk, so they're trying to capture a dual audience. They want the hardcore mobile gamer, but they also want the professional who wants peak performance and a massive battery.
But without pulling out a device that looks like a glowing spaceship during a client meeting.
Exactly. And furthermore, they are launching this Y70 alongside the Motorola Razr Fold and the Lenovo Y900 tablet.
An ecosystem play.
Yeah, they are pushing a synchronized ecosystem, hoping that interoperability will convince buyers to buy into the Lenovo brand rather than just buying a single isolated device.
Okay, so we are putting literal hyper-efficient supercomputers in our pockets. We have unprecedented processing power, massive energy density, and supply chain shifting global power dynamics.
That's our shiny skyscraper penthouse.
Right. But here is the pivot. We are taking all of this incredibly advanced space age hardware, and we are using it to access a software foundation that is highly vulnerable, structurally unsound, and in some cases, completely broken.
Yeah, the irony of carrying a device with military-grade processing power just to have your data stolen by a basic coding error, I mean, it cannot be overstated.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's analyze the European Union's brand new age verification app.
Oh, boy.
Right, because this was not some small startup side project. This was a massively funded, highly publicized government project.
Built with the explicit stated goal of protecting user privacy and securing digital identity.
Yes. So the European Commission announced on a Wednesday that the app was, quote, technically ready for rollout.
And then security researcher Paul Moore fundamentally dismantled that claim immediately after the app went live.
I mean, he hacked the app in under 2 minutes. less time than it takes to brew a cup of coffee.
Unbelievable.
And I want to be clear, my critique here isn't just surprise, it's analytical frustration. Because he didn't use some theoretical quantum decryption algorithm or a multi-million dollar zero-day exploit.
No, not at all.
The developers of this government security app used basic unsecured shared press files in Android to store critical data.
Yeah, and to put that technical term into perspective for anyone who isn't an Android developer, a shared prefs file is essentially an open digital sticky note.
A sticky note.
Literally, it is a simple text file designed to store trivial app preferences, like whether you want the app interface to be in dark mode or light mode. It is actively designed to be easily read and modified by the system.
Right.
It is absolutely not a secure vault.
For a secure vault, you are supposed to use the Android Key Store, which is a hardware-backed, highly encrypted environment specifically built into modern phones to protect sensitive keys.
Right.
But because the EU developers used the digital sticky note instead, Moore demonstrated that anyone with basic file access to the device could simply open the text file and edit the parameters.
Just change the text.
With a few keystrokes, you could bypass the biometric authentication, you could reset the security rate limits that prevent someone from guessing a PIN.
Wow.
You could just delete the authentication requirement entirely.
Yeah.
There was absolutely zero tamper detection built into the app to recognize that the file had been modified.
You know, if we connect this to the bigger picture, this isn't just a minor oversight by a junior coder.
No.
It is a systemic failure of the philosophy known as security and privacy by design. You cannot build an application and treat security as a final coat of paint you slap on right before launch.
Right. The architecture was fundamentally flawed from day one.
Exactly. And the sources also point out that the pins stored in the app lacked basic hashing and salting.
Okay, let's break that down for the listener.
Sure.
Hashing is essentially putting a password through a digital meat grinder, right? It turns a PIN like 1234 into a long, unrecognizable string of characters that can't be reversed.
Yes.
And salting is like throwing a handful of random spices into that meat grinder for every individual user, ensuring that even if two people use the same 1234 PIN, their chopped up hashed data looks completely different to an attacker.
Exactly. And by failing to hash and salt, and by storing data in plain text, this massive government entity demonstrated why independent penetration testing is non-negotiable.
You cannot grade your own homework in cybersecurity.
No, you can't. An external team would have flagged the shared prefs issue in minutes. As our sources highlighted, this catastrophic failure might actually place the European Commission in direct violation of their own GDPR data protection laws.
A regulatory body violating its own privacy regulations is peak irony.
It really is.
But if that is an embarrassing failure at the consumer app level, let's look at the foundational server level. Let's talk about Docker. Even if you have never heard of Docker, it directly impacts your life. It is the engine that runs containerized applications for millions of organizations globally.
Yeah, it's managing the servers for the bank you use, the streaming service you watched last night, the airline you just booked a flight with.
It is the plumbing of the modern internet.
It is.
And they just disclosed CVE 2026-340-40.
A critical server vulnerability assigned a CVSS severity score of 8.8 out of 10.
8.8 is massive.
Yeah.
And here is the twist. It is a 10-year-old bug.
Oh, man.
It's technically classified as a regression from a patch they previously issued back in 2024. The bug essentially allows an attacker to send an API request to the Docker daemon, which is the background service running the whole show with an entirely empty body.
Literally just a blank piece of paper.
Yes. And doing that somehow bypasses the authorization plugins. It forces the system to skip the security check, allowing the attacker to create privileged containers, access the host file system, and gain full, unrestricted root access to the underlying server.
Yeah, a regression happens when developers are updating or fixing software, and they accidentally reintroduce old code or overwrite a previous fix.
Bringing a dead bug back to life.
Exactly. But the actual mechanism of this bug is a classic example of fail open versus fail closed architecture.
Okay, let's use an analogy here. Imagine a bouncer at an exclusive nightclub whose job is to check ID cards.
Okay.
In a fail-closed system, if someone hands the bouncer a completely blank piece of plastic, the bouncer denies entry because they cannot verify the identity. The system defaults to closing the door.
Right. But this Docker bug created a fail-open scenario.
Wow.
The authorization plugin received a zero-length API request, the blank ID card, and the system essentially crashed in confusion.
Oh.
Instead of rejecting the request, its default fallback state was simply to approve it and wave the attacker inside. That is how a blank piece of code compromises an enterprise server.
Patching the server fixes the immediate flaw, obviously. But my takeaway here is that the broader architectural strategy has to change.
Oh, absolutely.
If your entire banking infrastructure relies on a single authorization plugin, and that plugin can be defeated by a blank request, the entire network is doomed.
And that concept is known as defense in depth. Organizations cannot rely on a single lock on the front door.
Right.
You need network IP limits, so even if the door is unlocked, only recognized, whitelisted IP addresses can even walk up to the house.
Makes sense.
You need robust, automated audit logging, so if someone does sneak a blank ID past the bouncer, internal alarms trigger the moment they try to access the VIP section. Relying on a single layer of security and an open source tool as ubiquitous as Docker is a recipe for a catastrophic data breach.
Okay, so we have mobile hardware that is incredibly powerful, and we have software infrastructure that have massive structural fail-open flaws.
Yeah.
But even if we perfectly patch Docker, and even if the EU rewrites their app using the hardware key store, the most consistently vulnerable, unpatchable part of any digital system isn't the code.
No, it's not.
It is the people operating the code.
Humans are always the weakest link in the security chain.
Always. Which brings us to the human exploit.
This is a big one.
The ransomware syndicate known as Shiny Hunters is currently dominating the cybersecurity headlines. They are actively threatening Zara, the massive global clothing brand, Carnival, the world's largest cruise operator, and the convenience giant 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
They have publicly set a hard deadline of April 21st, 2026, threatening to leak over 9 million compromised records.
Huge numbers.
We are talking personally identifiable information, digitized cruise passports, encrypted payment info, and massive loyalty program databases.
And the crucial detail in the source reports is how Shiny Hunters gained access.
Yeah.
They did not pull this off by finding a clever zero-day exploit in Zara's server code or bypassing a firewall with a brute force algorithm.
No, they bypassed the technology entirely.
Completely.
The reports explicitly state they succeeded through vishing, voice phishing.
Yeah.
They research specific employees on LinkedIn, called their cell phones, spoofed the caller ID to look like the internal IT help desk, and created a high-pressure scenario to steal their single sign-on, or SSO, credentials.
Right.
So my hypothesis here is that while single sign-on is fantastic for corporate convenience, it has created a massive single point of failure. So what does this all mean? Giant global corporations are spending millions on encryption, and they're being taken down by a simple, well-acted phone call.
Well, what's fascinating here is that it entirely exposes the psychological element of modern cybersecurity.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, SSO allows an employee to log in once in the morning and instantly access their email, the internal financial databases, and the customer records without entering another password.
It's super convenient.
It is. But it means that if an attacker compromises that one login, they possess the master keys to the entire corporate kingdom. Shiny Hunters proves that security is fundamentally a cultural issue, not just a technical or software issue.
Because you cannot issue a software patch to fix human trust or panic.
Exactly. When an employee receives a call with realistic background office noise from someone using the right corporate jargon, telling them their account is about to be locked, their instinct is to comply.
It's human nature.
It is. All the 256-bit encryption in the world cannot stop an employee from voluntarily handing over their password.
So how do you stop it?
Combating vishing requires continuous, simulated employee awareness training. It requires building a corporate culture where questioning a suspicious request from a superior or hanging up on the IT department to independently verify the call is actively rewarded rather than punished.
Okay, so we are psychologically easily tricked. Our software infrastructure is flawed. But as consumers, we still demand the most advanced tech experience possible.
Of course we do.
And interestingly, looking at our final sources, it seems like hardware manufacturers are finally starting to realize that the old paradigm of building tech, just jamming every possible feature into one static, unchangeable black box, might not be the path forward.
No, we are seeing a distinct shift away from monolithic hardware toward physical modularity and flexibility.
Yeah. Let's look at the Vivo X300 Ultra and the X300 SE, which our sources confirm are launching in India on May 7th, 2026.
Okay.
This release completely flips the smartphone camera paradigm we discussed earlier with Xiaomi. Instead of trying to permanently jam a massive array of focal lengths inside the thin glass body of the phone, Vivo is introducing a 200-megapixel main documentary sensor with ZEISS optics.
But they are adding a proprietary mount for modular lenses.
Exactly.
The standout feature being a physical, attachable 400-millimeter teleconverter for the Ultra model and a 200-millimeter version for the FE.
400 millimeters.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot cheat the physical properties of light and glass. To get real optical zoom, you need physical distance between the lenses.
Right.
Vivo is acknowledging that limitation. Instead of building a bulky Swiss Army knife that takes mediocre photos at every distance, they are giving us a high-end, razor-sharp chef's knife.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Where you can physically swap the blades when you need to shoot wildlife or sports.
And if we look closely at the broader industry, this trend of breaking away from static hardware isn't confined to mobile phones either.
Really?
Where else are we seeing it?
Well, our sources briefly highlighted a major strategic roadmap announcement from Nissan on April 14th, 2026.
Okay.
They are marking a definitive company-wide transition from manufacturing mechanical vehicles to producing software-defined smart cars.
Wow. So cars are no longer mechanical machines. They are essentially rolling computers.
Exactly. And if you tie the Vivo modular camera strategy and the Nissan smart car transition together, you get the ultimate aha moment for where technology is heading in 2026.
Let's hear it.
We are definitively leaving the era of static, mechanical, self-contained technology. We are entering an era of highly adaptable, deeply integrated smart ecosystems.
A vehicle is no longer an engine and wheels that stays the same from the day you buy it. It is a modular software platform you update overnight.
And a phone is no longer a fixed pane of glass. It is a modular hub that physically adapts to your environmental needs.
Exactly.
To recap the wild journey we have been on today, we are living in a landscape where you can carry a hyper-efficient 7,000 milliamp hour battery and snap a professional 400 millimeter ZEISS lens onto your phone.
Yeah.
But at the exact same moment, a 10-year-old server bug can wave an attacker right past a digital bouncer. A government privacy app can be dismantled in 2 minutes by editing a plain text file.
A sticky note.
A sticky note. And a massive cruise line's passport database can be stolen because a well-meaning employee fell for a high-pressure phone call.
It's crazy.
The physical hardware is soaring into the future, but the software architecture and the human element are desperately struggling to keep up.
And, you know, looking at that divide leads to a really provocative thought about where we go from here. As consumer hardware becomes increasingly modular, like those Vivo snap-on lenses and everyday infrastructure, like our cars become entirely software-defined, will we eventually need to adopt modular security?
Oh, I like where this is going. What does a modular security approach actually look like in practice?
Think about the Shiny Hunters syndicate exploiting single sign-on. What if we stop relying on easily stolen passwords entirely?
Oh.
Imagine a future where instead of remembering a login or relying on an authenticator app, you carry a physical snap-on hardware key.
Like a literal physical key for your phone.
Yes. When you need to authorize sensitive corporate data or access your bank, you physically attach the key to your phone or laptop.
Wow.
And when you remove it and put it in your pocket, you mechanically sever your digital identity from the internet. You introduce a physical air gap that no voice phishing scam or blank API request can bypass remotely.
But let me push back on that before we wrap up. If we move to physical hardware keys, aren't we just trading a digital vulnerability for a physical one?
How do you mean?
What happens when I accidentally leave that physical key on a table at a coffee shop? Haven't I just handed the keys to my entire life to whoever picks it up?
It is a totally valid concern, but it comes down to containing the blast radius.
Okay.
If you lose a physical key, the threat is localized to the one person who finds it, and you can instantly revoke its access remotely.
Okay.
But a compromised digital password can be sold to 1,000 hackers across the globe in seconds. Physical modularity forces an attacker to be in the same room as you, rather than in a basement halfway across the world.
The ultimate modular defense.
Yeah.
You physically pull the drawbridge up yourself.
Exactly.
That is a brilliant concept to leave you with today. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. As you go about your day, using your incredibly powerful phone or logging in your work systems, keep questioning the underlying tech you use. Don't just stand there admiring the shiny penthouse.
Remember to check the foundation.
We'll catch you on the next one.